Honestly, don't you two read?
Welcome to Book Rant for our very special edition Polish pierogi episode.
It's the Naomi Novik episode, which is, yes. I don't know, I feel like her books are very like rooted in like Slavic culture.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. Slavic lore.
And lore, yes. But also, for a hot second, yes. I would like to talk about The Witcher.
No. First, I want to say.
Yes.
Welcome.
Oh, yes. Welcome.
I'm V.
I'm Jess.
I've stuffed myself full of pierogies, gołąbki, which are cabbage rolls.
My favorites.
They're so good.
I cannot drink.
Made by an official Polish woman.
What are your cabbage rolls made out of? Just out of curiosity.
Cabbage?
Yes, but what's inside?
Beef. Sometimes beef and pork. I mean, it depends who's making it. Beef and pork, and then rice. Okay. Usually short grain white rice.
Okay.
And then tomato sauce.
Yes. Okay. So my grandmother makes cabbage rolls as well. But it's a recipe that was given to her from my Jewish aunt.
Okay.
I also love matzo ball soup, but that's not nor here nor there. Yes. But yeah, I just find it so bizarre how an Italian lady is now making like this.
But those are also, those aren't even Polish. Those are like Slavic in general.
Yeah. And like
I've also had babka, which is a Polish babka, cake.
Yeah,
babka. And not even Polish. I think it's like general Slavic again. But
I associate babka and cabbage rolls and all that stuff with just Jewish food.
Yeah. No, there's actually a lot of crossover, even in names for things, not even food.
Mm.
Like, I know shmata, for example, is a rag, and other people know that same word as meaning rag.
Shmata?
Jewish. Yeah,
shmata. Yeah, shmata business, yeah. It means, like, textile industry.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, he's in the shmata business. Yeah.
That's weird.
I'm not Jewish, FYI.
All right. Well, I'm Polish, FYI.
But I
have a lot we can get into it, which is the main purpose of this episode. Books aside, has anyone watched The Witcher? Because we have.
And it's just been an all-consuming 2 weeks of my life. And I cannot. Like, I'm texting people at work and I'm like, have you watched The Witcher? I need to talk to someone about The Witcher. And they're like, no, I have like 3 episodes left. I'm like, bitch, just finish the episode so I can have someone to talk about it. Like, that's how into it I am. Yeah. And like, I haven't bought the books yet, but I intend to.
Oh, I bought the books. I've yet to receive them, but I immediately bought them even before I finished this show because I was like, this has been recommended to me from someone who has played the video games. And now I'm seeing, and I haven't played the video games, but I've watched an entire LP because my computer cannot possibly tolerate Witcher 3 or even any of the other games, like not even the first one. The books have been recommended to me. I bought them. I'm waiting for them. I'm excited.
They're on my wish list, but I think I'm just going to buy them on my e-reader. Apparently there's a specific sequence in which to read them.
Okay, so the sequence of the series is Blood of Elves, The Time of Contempt, Baptism of Fire, and then Tower of Swallows, Lady of the Lake, Season of Storms, I guess. And then there are two prequels, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm starting with the Blood of Elves because that's
I want to do it in the official order. In the official order.
I think at this point I'm probably going to just read the whole thing, every single book eventually. So
I mean, I don't know if I should binge everything or just like slowly like read through things and like as a way to just like calm me down for 2 years.
Yeah. Well, that's the hard part. We're going to have to wait 2 years. And I told you, and I'm going to repeat to everyone right now, I'm all for letting authors, producers, performers take their time in producing something of content, because how many series or books have been ruined just because someone is trying to get them out fast? So I'm all for letting them take a 2-year period to basically produce the second season. But at the same time, I'm still distraught because that's a long time.
It is a long time, and I can't go on in my world without more Geralt.
Yeah, you are a little bit obsessed with Geralt.
Yeah, I'm just maybe a tiny bit obsessed with Geralt.
I'd say like halfway obsessed.
Halfway obsessed. Like in a way that's probably not healthy, but probably scares people, and they're like, what's wrong with this person? Like, she knows really maybe a little bit too much.
Yes. I do have to say, though, what I really love about Geralt is that he isn't really a hero.
No.
And again, my main experience of him has been through the video games, or mm-hmm. specifically The Wild Hunt, the third game.
That's it. That's the only game that I've like put my hand on.
What?
Take that for what you will. No, it's all the right. only game. I haven't looked at the other two.
But as a video game, you are playing Geralt. Mm. So you're playing the hero of an RPG. And in RPGs, the traditional trajectory is that you start off weak and you gain a lot of spells. You gain a lot of like equipment and armor and blah, blah, blah. And you basically become super beefy by the end, where you can fix anyone's problem and basically do anything and collect anything because you are the main character in an RPG.
Yeah, I don't think
that's
that
kind of how RPGs go. But what I actually really love about the series is that Geralt is one of three protagonists, and he is arguably the least capable out of all of the three of them to fix things, because he's like, he has always been a kind of anti-hero, but you see a lot of that in the series and the show. But he's also like, he's just not as powerful as you feel him to be in the games. And Yennefer is incredibly powerful. And honestly, so is Ciri. And
it's so fun
to see, like, Geralt almost vulnerable. I mean, he is vulnerable in a lot of spots in the first season. But, like, oh, I really loved that little... I really love that. And also, the emotional arcs were super well done for a lot of the characters.
I agree. Like, okay... This is not a spoiler because The Witcher's been out for since December now.
Yeah.
So the last.
Also, if this is spoiling anything to you, just stop and go watch the series right now.
Yeah, because
it's
honestly,
okay. We'll wait.
It's very, very worth it. But the last scene before the series ends, I was just like, "Bitch, you cannot let me end. Leave me like that."
I do have to say, though, again, not a spoiler, but like they left a lot hanging.
Well, I think,
like, a lot of different characters are in the midst of something, and you don't even know what's going to happen with them.
Yeah, it's like, we don't know where Yennefer is, because technically the way the magic system works in that whole world is that you must take the life force of one thing for another, right? And she just fucking burns, I don't know how much...
Unless she's basically taking advantage of that mechanic where she's utilizing chaos, and because she has so much emotional chaos and baggage in her life that she has been shoveling into a bottle and not recognizing, like, she has so much chaotic fuel, so maybe she's burning that.
But there's also another theory that I've been reading up on was her, not her, but, like, the wish that Geralt made with the djinn.
Yeah?
I think that comes into play at one point. I believe it does.
Could be.
That episode, that Sodden Hill battle, was like
was
one
so
of the
well
best
done.
Episodes. Ugh, it was so... This show is giving me everything I did not get from Game of Thrones. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, fucking last season was so bad.
Yes. And you know what?
What?
I really don't like medieval settings. I don't like sword and magic fantasies. And... I did watch Game of Thrones, and I did try to read Game of Thrones, and it was not for me. And even though this is superficially the same thing, it's sword and magic. It's wizards, mages, and people using swords in a medieval setting. It doesn't feel like that at all.
At all.
And I think it's because this is not English or French or German or like Viking medieval era. This is...
Totally
Slavic era.
This is like
you're like Central European, and I know I felt that way for my book that I'm actually going to talk about this episode for Uprooted.
What?
And I'm wondering if you even felt the same for
yes. Oh my god, 1000%.
Yeah,
and I'm like 1000%.
Oh shit, do I like medieval era sword and
see,
magic fantasy? Like, what is happening right
I
now?
Know. See, like with my
oh, it feels
with,
so good.
With Spinning Silver, I didn't get the feeling that it was medieval. In my mind.
I don't know when it takes place or
me neither.
How it
like
takes
that's
place.
Another thing that Novik does that I like, that she doesn't really put a like specific time stamp on when things are supposed to, like when things are happening, which I like because it leaves it up to the reader to kind of make that up for themselves. So
yeah, and you honestly, in my book, I don't even know if it takes place in this world or not. It could take place in this one. Uprooted could take place.
Oh, so can Spinning Earth. Silver, oh. And more so than Uprooted.
Oh,
You will see. Well, I'll tell you about
it. I love that like undecided factor, and I know a lot of people hate that, but I love it when the reader can make a choice about interpreting something that happens.
Oh, yeah. So that's like.
Have we moved on to talking about books now?
I guess. I mean, Witcher's over, but we will probably. I want to come back to it because there's an interesting. Oh, yeah. I actually tabbed the page off because there's a piece of dialogue that very much seemed like the law of surprise.
Oh.
In Novik's book.
And the law of surprise is a Slavic custom.
Exactly. So.
Ooh.
I don't know if I read it properly. Okay, and I don't say that because I'm like don't understand words, but like
right.
The way this book is written is much different than how Uprooted was written. Her writing style pretty much stays the same, but
okay.
In this book she shifts perspectives.
Oh.
So, you know how in Uprooted it's Agnieszka's perspective the whole way through, this is not that.
Huh.
It's very much, like, in the same world and in the same, like, how do we say, in the same, like, realm, I would say. But yeah. It's a totally different world. It's a totally different, like, magic system. It's a totally different...
Huh.
Everything's different. It just feels the same. And that's the only thing.
Because you'd almost think that... I thought this was maybe another standalone book in the same world.
It's not even in the same world. I don't think so.
But if you say it's even a different magic system, then that's super interesting. Because uh-huh. She didn't just take a magic system that worked in one book and then translate it into another.
It's totally different.
Oh.
But there are some little...
That takes imagination.
There's a bit of overlapping and it's... I'll explain it, but like... One thing that she constantly comes back to, which is Baba Yaga.
Yes. Yes.
So.
Oh, yes. Okay. Okay, okay,
so
okay.
That's okay. Those are like the little links. By the way, I finished this book literally half an hour ago. So it's very fresh in my mind.
Yeah. Good. The first impressions only.
Only first impression. But you see, like, because I read Uprooted, I think I have a lot to say about this book and how different it was from it. But it wasn't, like, it was just different in a good way. By the way, I read Spinning Silver by Naomi Novik. And if you couldn't tell, we're doing a Naomi Novik episode.
And I'm reading Uprooted by Naomi Novik.
Which also, back to episode one, is one of my favorite books.
What episode one?
Episode one of our podcast.
Yes. I remember this. This is the ninth episode. Like, you'd think I could carry a thought longer than that.
It's okay. Okay. Just plot overview. I don't want to give too much away because I do not want to spoil anything about this book because I think it's very special.
Yeah. Same.
I have yet to rate it on Goodreads. That's how fresh it is. Okay.
Oh, man.
So... Basically, it's the story. You have like three different perspectives that you run through, but then it just those three different perspectives become like six or seven.
Oh.
So, what? Like, yeah, it's very bizarre. So, the book, the way it's presented, you have our main character, Miriam, who is the daughter of a moneylender who is just too nice, who doesn't, he's not like very strict about the debts that he is owed. So she kind of takes things into her own hands and she's like starts collecting the money that he is owed. And then she kind of starts her own like money lending venture. Mm-hmm. Then you have Wanda, who is the girl.
Wanda,
yeah.
That's my grandmother's name.
Oh, that's cute.
Wanda.
So Wanda is another girl whose perspective we have that Miriam hires. She kind of goes and says, you're going to help pay off your father's debt. Come and work for us. Okay. And every day you work, you'll lower the debt. But then it kind of turns into this relationship where she really actually, really, she likes Wanda a lot. And she starts paying her.
Romantically?
No.
Oh.
No, that's another thing about these books is that they're very heteronormative.
Yeah, I noticed that in mine.
Which there's, you know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
Also, a foreshadowing for my book, I just found that there was very little representation of romance general.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's just like there are so few instances,
mm-hmm.
and Novik just happens to, the very few instances that she does represent, they happen to be heteronormative.
Yes. But here's the thing.
But I've also never got the idea that she was like homophobic or anything, or mm-mm. transphobic.
No, I don't get that impression either. I think it's, she's just trying to portray a fairy tale, and
yeah.
And there are, like, in this book, there are, I think there's a homosexual character.
Okay.
Not
but
very,
But I guess like, that also comes down to the idea of, like, write what you know, and then don't speak for other people's,
exactly.
Don't represent other people's perspectives.
Yeah.
So don't talk about trans issues if you're not, if you have no idea about that.
Exactly. So, like I said, this book is very, like, heteronormative.
Mm-hmm.
But what was I saying?
I'm sorry. Vanda comes in
She starts working for Miriam, and Miriam is like, you know what? I'm doing well. My money lending business is doing well. I'm going to send mm-hmm. Wanda out to collect for me. She's going to help my mom and my dad and whatever. And Wanda comes from like this really shitty, shitty, shitty household where her mom has died. Her father is a drunk that beats her and her two younger brothers.
Oh, Jesus.
And her brothers who are also have... Her youngest brother is one that has a perspective in this book as well, but later mm-hmm. on. His name is Stepan. And then her middle... Well, her... Because they're both younger than her. The youngest mm-hmm. one is Stepan, and the middle brother is Sergei. And she has, like, this...
I love these names.
She has, like, these very... This very, very, like... I don't want to say cute, because it's not cute, but, like, she has this very nice relationship with her brothers, where mm-hmm. they're all, she looks out for them, and they look out for her, and they're very much a family in and of themselves without their father, because they hate their father.
Yeah.
And then you have your other main character, she's not really a main character, but I don't consider her a main character,
mm-hmm.
is Irina, the daughter of a duke in this mm-hmm. town. And basically, the story goes where Miriam's money lending business is going so well that she's making money off of it.
Oh, nice.
And these, I don't even know what to call them. In the book, they're called Staric.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically, I'm just going to call them winter elves, because that's literally what they seem to be. Like,
okay.
I have to stop picturing White Walkers, because literally... The picture and
those are snow zombies.
The picture on the dust cover, it's actually pretty telling, first of all, about what's gonna happen in the book.
Oh.
So he kinda reminds me of that, but like more pretty. So basically the Staric come and notice that she is able to double her money, and that and they kinda want in on this deal. So in the past, they have raided, like, towns, killed people, like, this whole thing in the winter.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because they extend winter, too. So, like, they have a control on winter. And winter in this book is just, it's, like, June and it's still winter.
Uh-huh.
So the king of the Starics comes to see Miriam and says, take this silver and turn it and double it for me. I want gold. And she does.
What?
And then he comes back a second time with more silver. And this time she's like, okay, I need to be, like, more...
On guard?
No. And then he's like...
fucking snow elf.
So he comes back with more silver, and she still produces more gold.
Huh.
And then a third time he goes, the third time I'm giving you 7 days. So basically what she does is she takes the silver and she goes to the neighboring city, and she has it turned into jewelry. And the father of Irina buys it and gives it to her.
Oh, okay.
So the first thing she has made is a ring. The second mm-hmm. thing is a necklace. And the third thing is a crown. When she's finished, when she gives away, or when she sells the crown and she gets 1,000 gold coins or whatever, the king of the Starks comes back to her house and is like, well, you know what? You were able to do what I told you. You're coming with me. You're going to be my queen, bitch.
Oh, no. It's another one of these abduction narratives.
But it's not really an... yes, but no.
Yes, but no.
Because she agrees to it. Well, not really. Because she feared for her life, right? So she agrees to it. So she...
That's the same narrative. Like
yeah, it's the same... I don't know what attracts me to these books, but I find
it... I don't know either. It's very strange.
It's fucking weird. Anyway, yeah. So...
But seriously, like, the past couple of books, you had Gods of Jade and Shadow, which I actually got for you, which is funny. Yeah. But that was about abduction. An abduction. You had Court of Mist and Fury, and even abduction. A Court of Thorns and Rosen. Abduction. Like, a double abduction in that one, in that series. Oh, man.
Uprooted this.
Yeah.
So she goes off with the Starks and whatever. Mm-hmm. And the whole
She's
story...
She's like, damn, I shouldn't have been so good at my job.
Fuck, man.
So
weird. Basically, it's her trying to figure out how to go back to, as they call it, the sunlit world. And, like, Irina with the Starric jewelry is able to marry the Tsar mm-hmm. of this land. And that kind of comes into play with it because he has, like, a super secret that he's keeping from everyone as to how he got his, like, how he got his throne. And it's just... The way it plays out is so, like, everything is interconnected, even though it's, like, very removed, because Miriam is from this, like, little town of nothing, and she shouldn't, like, whatever's going on with her goes all the way to the top, like, with Irina, and it's just, their motives are so different, but the same. The way everything plays out. I don't want to give away too much because...
No, but this is making it sounding mysteriously intriguing.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what the dust cover does. It's intriguing. Oh. It doesn't sound like much, but like the way that it's like written and the way that the story plays out, which is very slow.
Yeah.
It's done so thoughtfully.
Because
of
the way... I can understand that based on Uprooted.
Because it's like... The main action of the book happens, I want to say, in the last 100 pages. There are things that happen. There are things that happen in between that are, like, high climax and whatever, but not the main, like, not plot point, because it's, like, that's another thing about this book. Like, the plot was so, like, there but not there.
Huh.
It was
weird. You know, I did have, I felt a little bit similar in my book. And I'll explain why later.
Yeah. And
hopefully,
like,
I'll remember.
And another thing that was interesting about this book that was so different from Uprooted was that Novik brought religion into the story.
Oh, really? What religion?
Yes. With Judaism, obviously.
Oh, okay. What do you mean, obviously?
She's Jewish.
Novik?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's true. So, that's true. I read that in her acknowledgments at the back of Uprooted. Yeah.
So that plays a part in the story. That was always a question to me every time I would read fantasy, is like, how do people take on religion, especially in this, like, I was going to say in our realm.
Yeah. Oh, no, you've been reading too much fantasy. Oh, no.
We are so familiar with certain religious traditions that often don't translate to fantasy books, and authors find some, I think it's a cheap thing to do, to like take, let's say, Christmas for example, and kind of like turn it into a holiday in their fantasy book. I'm like, well, it's obviously,
but I mean, at the
Christmas.
At the same time, Hogswatch,
like, that's the thing, there are certain iterations of like holidays that are taken in books and that are done properly, but then you could see when it's done cheaply.
You're just doing a direct translation and plagiarizing.
Exactly.
Which is also like, that's so superficially sentimental, because you are really taking people's own experience of a holiday and being like, so this holiday, just take all of those emotions that you're feeling and then move them onto this holiday, which is basically the same. It's just a different name.
So
it's cheap.
In this world, religion and magic exist together. And it's so interesting. Like, because obviously the Starik are magic, and Miriam is magic in her abilities.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre because, yeah, they're villainized, the Starik are, because they're seen as these monsters that come and take your gold and kill and whatever. But, like, also they are able to bring winter. Like, there's a whole, like, shift with them. There's a seasonal shift. And that, in my opinion, is magic.
It's true.
But then there's also, like, God. And not just, like, Christian God. There's the Jewish God. And that's the one that's touched upon the most. And Miriam is Jewish.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting to see how that works in a non, like, in a fantasy world. Because it upholds all the same traditions. So they do Shabbat, they have, like, their weddings, and they have all these, all the same...
Wait, this is the Starik or Miriam?
No, this is Miriam.
Okay, yeah, that makes
Miriam.
Sense.
Miriam, yeah.
So even more of a reason for this to take place on Earth. In, quote-unquote, our realm.
But I don't feel like it's our realm. That's the thing. That's the thing. I don't feel like it's our realm. It doesn't it doesn't feel like our realm, you know?
Why not?
Just the way that she describes everything. I get the feeling of, like, Russia. That's my
well,
like...
with a czar type of thing.
Yeah, with a twist. But it doesn't feel like Russia because of the names that she uses and... Mm-hmm. The countries and whatever, and, like, it doesn't feel like Russia. It feels like another world that just has Judaism in it.
Yeah,
you know, like an alternate reality, but
yeah,
with magic. And, like, another thing is that she intertwines the magic with Judaism. There's a part in the book where they're trying to grow this, like, winter tree. They're trying to grow this tree, and then they're like, it's not going to grow, it needs to be winter, but it's, like, turning into summer. So, like, Miriam's father's like, oh, let's just say this prayer. Mm-hmm. And then the tree starts to grow. So, I don't know, like, I don't know how it works, but it does. And it's just, like, so...
That sounds really beautiful.
It is. It's, like, this book is so beautifully written. And, like, Miriam as a character is just so... go-getter. Like, she's just like, she's a go-getter. She's like, you know what, you think you're gonna fool me, I'm gonna fool you. Like,
I kind of love that about Agnieszka in Uprooted.
She really writes these like interesting girl character, like, female characters. For me, at least, I really liked the relationship that Miriam and Wanda had, and Wanda and her family and Miriam's family, because Wanda's family ends up living with Miriam's family at one point, and
because Miriam disappears, right? So they have to figure things out.
Exactly. So Wanda and her two brothers go live with Miriam's family, and at the end of the book, it's really cute because they would always call him by their, like, official name, like Panov or Panova Mandelstam, and then at the end of the book, it's like Papa Mandelstam and Mama Mandelstam. Aww. It's really cute. Like, it's very heartwarming. And, like, you see that...
So wait, what is it? It's Pan and what?
Panova and for women and Panov for men.
That's interesting because in Polish you say Pan for a man, like Mr. or Sir, and then Pani for Madam, Mrs., whatever.
She likes to play on language too, I've realized.
Yeah,
because seriously. It's taking directly from that language, but then it's like just changing it just a touch, you
You're
know,
like it.
So yeah, I don't know, like, and also another thing that I like about Novik is the way she does endings, and the Uprooted ending blew me away. I don't know if this ending blew me away, but the, like, the way that it ended, like, the last line, it's like a powerful ending.
Yeah.
And, like, I will say that this book had happy endings for every one of the perspectives, so...
It's obviously going to happen. This is a fairy tale.
Yeah, and, like, I like how it's a fairy tale and that she gives everyone their happy ending. Because that's... I like that. It doesn't always have to be, like, doom and gloom and whatever, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. This is a fairy tale. She gives everybody a happy ending, even though the way that she ends the things, especially for Uprooted, it's just so open-ended, but it's so good that you're just like,
I love it.
Yes.
It's true. It's that feeling of, this is so good.
Yeah.
There's so much potential, but I don't need more.
No.
Like, this is completely satisfying.
And that's the thing. Novik, you know, was prompted, especially for, like, a Rooted, she was asked, like, if she's going to do a sequel. She's like, well, mm-hmm. not really, no. That book ended.
I mean, it's all there for you.
Like, yeah, she goes,
if you need more, write fanfics.
Yeah. And she's like, if you want something similar, read my other book. Because it is similar. Like, the Cross formula marketing. Is similar. It's yeah. very much, it follows the same formula. But a lot of it is different. Yeah, formula,
and it sounds a lot like it's of a similar tone.
Yeah, that's what she intended to do. It has the same tone as Uprooted. It has the same, like, world. I don't know. It's not the same world, but it is. Like, it's very much the same, but not the same, you know? It's
I mean, it's a different story. It's a different...
Everything is different. It's just like that. She sticks to that formula that works really well. Like, I liked it a lot. And, you know, I'm, like, honestly interested to see her series, how those play out. Because these are standalone books.
Yeah. I actually did look into her series. There are 9 books in the series, and I think she ended with a 9th book or something.
Okay.
I can't find anything beyond the first 3 books.
Of course.
Which is sad. But I'm going to keep trying, because that's generally something that I would be interested in reading.
Yeah, me too, because it just sounds interesting. And again,
yeah.
I just like women who take a place in the fantasy genre. This is like, I don't know, I think it's really well written, and she's been doing it for so long. I don't know how long ago she wrote those dragon books, but she's doing extremely well. And I really like that she takes up a nice, large place in that fantasy.
And in something that's, I mean, she's writing about like
something
sword
she knows,
magic and dragons.
And
she brings a Polish Slavic influence to it. She takes fairy tales and meshes those into her lore and into her characters, and I really love that. I really appreciate
it. You should read it. I think you should read it. I think you would
me,
like
I
it
should
yeah
read it.
you should
me,
read
I.
it, and everybody else who wants to.
Yes, that too. So I read Uprooted by Naomi Novik, and I started this book pretty much right after we finished our last episode, because I was so excited to get into it. And I read it in 2 days. Technically 2.5, because I read the first bit of, like, I read the first 50 pages or so one evening when I was going to bed. And then the next day I picked it up and just read it in all of my free time. And I could not put it down. It got to the point where, like, I did not walk my dogs because I was reading. It got to the point where if I had to shower, I would take a bath instead so I could bring the book into the bath with me. Like, it was, I could not put that book down, and that felt so nice to me. And this feels a little bit weird because you've obviously already read the book because it's one of your favorite books. But I do have to explain it to people who might not have read it.
Yes,
and I'm going to try not to give any spoilers because oh, and Spinning Silver?
Yeah.
We'll put in some spoiler alerts here and there. But in my case, I did find that there was a very loopy plot going on. So I don't know if I can even relate the plot that well.
That's
there was definitely a lot of plot
about,
happening.
That's what I felt about Spinning Silver. Like, I don't know if I related the plot well, because it's just, I don't know, like, read the book, figure it out.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of things happening. Like, there's so much happening that honestly a quote-unquote lesser author could have easily strung this out into a trilogy or something.
Oh, but everything
there's so much happening.
Yeah.
But a lot of the revelations are personal. They're like a little shift in perspective, and they directly relate to a plot development that then, a plot development essentially blossoms out of that little revelation, which is super well done. But also it means that I really don't want to give a lot away in terms of giving you an overview of the plot, because a lot of it is about these small revelations that happen that then progress into more. And those revelations are so rewarding. So
I don't know, for me, the book starts off as one thing and ends up as another thing.
Oh,
that's,
completely.
That's for me, that was like how I took it.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the same experience. So I'm just going to lay out a very simple skeleton structure that kind of stops maybe a quarter or even a third of the way through the book. So there is a girl, Agnieszka, who lives in a valley, which is bordered by mountains and a forest, and at the end of which is a tower, which is the Dragon's Tower. And no spoilers, the forest is often called the wood, and the wood is kind of, it has a, not even a personality, like it it's has alive. A presence in it. Yeah. It's alive. There are things that come out that do things. I was about to say like criminal things, but no, they're like,
no.
It's, people understand it as having an evil presence or it's, having malicious intent, and the wood often attacks them for a lot of reasons. And the dragon isn't a dragon. The dragon is a name given to a wizard who lives in that tower, mm-hmm. whose name is Sarkin. Mm-hmm. Every 10 years, Sarkin takes a girl from the valley. And this is, the reasonings behind this are explained over a lot of different conversations throughout the books. It's just like very slowly dripped mm-hmm. out. But he always likes to take the prettiest and the most talented girl from the valley. And then when that girl is taken into the tower, she can't leave. She can't contact her family mm-hmm. or go back into the valley for 10 years. And this, if this sounds like a Beauty and the Beast abduction, it's because it is. This was the most awkward part of the book, and I honestly felt really claustrophobic and stressful when this was happening mm-hmm. because that's what Agnieszka is feeling. Because, surprise, surprise, Agnieszka, the protagonist, is the one who is taken.
Yeah.
Because you're a wizard, Ari.
You just gave it away.
I know. But also, like, spoiler. I mean, that was actually a revelation that I really enjoyed, but...
Yeah. But it happens really early on in the book. Like,
deal with it, people. That's, like, such an insignificant revelation.
Yeah.
But again, it's one of those things where, like, she finds that she has magic... And that develops into so many mm-hmm. other possibilities that then are explored later on. So, like, this happens, like, with, what, the first 50 pages?
Oh, yeah. Why he takes her and not... never say... Cassia.
And Cassia is Agnieszka's best friend in the valley. Cassia was the one who was supposed to be taken away because she was pretty and talented and perfect. And then from there, other things happen... And I don't even, this is, again, this is like the first 50 pages of the book, but I don't want to give anything else away because it's so rewarding to have this mm-hmm. unravel. But essentially, the wood has more than meets the eye. Mm-hmm. The dragon is someone where he's more than meets the eye. Agnieszka really develops into this non-stereotypical magic user.
Mm-hmm.
Even confronted with the magic that other people use, like the magic that Sarkin uses. Anyways, you mentioned that this book was slow to start.
Uh-huh.
And I agree, but I mostly disagree, because I honestly think this book starts really quickly. Like, within the first 15 pages, Agnieszka has been chosen.
Oh, yeah. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking in relation to, like, I think things start to happen, like, after. Was it the prince that visits the tower? Was it a prince?
Oh, yeah.
I think things start to pick up from there.
Yeah. And like I said, it feels very claustrophobic because within the first 15 pages, she's taken to the tower.
Yeah.
And then she discovers some things. And then after that, things change. And I feel like she develops a new perspective and then she's able to see her position more clearly. Mm-hmm. But during those first 60 pages, anyone reading this book, if you can make it through the 60 pages, please do it, because that is the weakest part of the book. And...
I agree.
I really love this book, but this beginning completely offset it. Like, it really does feel claustrophobic. It really does feel
odd. Maybe that was done purposefully.
Well, you were feeling what Agnieszka's feeling, mm-hmm. which is good, because the writing is good enough that it can actually make you feel what the character is feeling. But it's not a pleasant feeling, and it doesn't need to be there. And a lot of what happens with the dragon, I don't like. I think it's just a genuinely... weak start
mm-hmm.
to what later transforms into something very powerful and magical.
Yeah.
And I just wish this beginning had been reimagined into something else, because mm-hmm. I just really don't like it. And I love the rest of the book. It bothers me so much that this beginning is in such a good book.
When I was reading it, I remember telling you, I'm reading this book. I really don't know where it's taking me.
Yeah.
But then I like immediately, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like at the same point, maybe a little bit further into the book, I was like, holy shit, I can't stop reading this book. It's so good.
Yeah.
But like, I really needed to power through because I was bored.
like, I fully recommend this book, but I also really recommend that you do power through those first 60 pages, like the first 10, 15, 20% of the book, because it is not a representation of what develops. And that's what bothers me about it. It's not, it doesn't feel right. I even find, like, the writing and the narration in the first part of the book feels disjointed and doesn't, like, sentence after sentence feels a little bit disjointed. Agnieszka's thoughts and narration are a little bit off. And it just, it didn't feel good. Yeah. And then all of a sudden that changes. Anyways, the plot then expands and meanders. And like I said before, I feel like another author could have easily expanded the amount of stuff that happens in this book into three books. Yeah, and they could have milked this into a trilogy.
But I wouldn't have been as good.
It wouldn't have been as good. And that's what really got me into this book. You really feel like you're in a healthy fantasy series where, like, one thing pops up that just completely changes everything else that has happened before. And it keeps on going past where you thought it would go.
Yes.
That makes it sound really bad, but, like, you keep on expecting the end to be this one thing
that's been developing.
It's and totally then all of a sudden, like, that end development suddenly happens, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm a third of the way through the book. What's going to happen next? And there's development after development that happens.
Yeah, I...
Which makes it so thrilling to read.
I 1,000% agree, but, like, can we talk about that ending, though?
That ending... we'll get to there. I still want to talk about the things that I love, and the ending is something that I love and I hate. Okay. I really loved Agnieszka and her development through this book. It's so well done. I really love it. It's so seamless.
You know what? I have to say, though, this is why I prefer Uprooted over Spinning Silver, because there are so many perspective changes in Spinning Silver. You don't really get to see that growth with Miriam or with Wanda. I mean, a bit with Wanda, even Irina. Like, I see them, but they're not, like, I don't know, I found it a bit shaky because you're shifting so much.
You know what I did find shaky, though? Agnieszka is a little bit too cognizant, and she's, like, a little bit too aware of other people's intentions. Especially given that she's a farmer's daughter living in a very secluded valley who is an introvert and likes to wander around in the woods alone. Like, there's nothing in her backstory that would account for the kind of revelations that she does have, or the kind of awareness that she has of other people and their motivations.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like that's done differently with Spinning Silver. So right off the bat, you know who Miriam is, like, her backstory and everything. Like, you know who she is.
But then in Uprooted, you really have those developments, that backstory takes place in the actual story itself.
That's
and, like,
the
you
thing.
Get so much development that happens and reasoning behind those developments.
It's Agnieszka figuring stuff out.
Yeah. Another thing that I really enjoyed was the magic. Because you don't even have one single type of magic.
That's
you have a number of different types of magic and specialties within that type of magic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the traditional fantasy magic of the type of thing that can be replicated, and that's Sarkin's magic. And then you have Agnieszka's magic, which is can't be summed up or explained in the same way. Agnieszka's narration even does a wonderful job of basically explaining the magic through metaphors and analogies, like, because it really is her own type of magic that is rooted in the valley. And yet I actually read a criticism that I can understand. Someone was saying that the magic had weak limitations and therefore was bad magic or badly done magic, and that the spell sounded gibberish and were unrecognizable as words.
But they're not supposed to sound...
And therefore were not good.
But they're not supposed... Like, magic is magic. They're not supposed to have any...
Yes.
Like...
So here's my criticism of this criticism, which is that, first of all, people don't have to abide by any rules of magic.
Yeah.
Brandon Sanderson, this guy that I keep on bringing up, he proposed the three rules of magic, which I forget... But one of the rules is that your magic has to have limitations. So all of a sudden people started thinking, oh, well, you have a magic system in a book. It has to have limitations. It has to have this and that and that. And I disagree with that. magic has the right to be
whatever you want it to
magical.
Be.
Magical. Yeah. Like,
there should be no rules.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to be able to explain it or reproduce it. It can just be magical. And then secondly, does magic need to feel familiar to the reader to be magical?
Mm-mm.
No, I disagree. But I can't be the best judge of this question or in answering the question because all of the magic felt so familiar to me. And this was my favorite part of the book because I knew how to pronounce a lot of these names.
Yeah.
I knew the sounds of the magic. What sounded like gibberish to other people, I knew because I speak a little bit of Polish. The song that Agnieszka sings at the very beginning for one of her first spells is a song that I actually know. It's called Many Years, and in Polish it's called Stolat. So I was actually able, while reading this book, to sing along with Agnieszka, which that felt so magical to me. So this is, I mean, this is a magic system that is very much based in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she's rooted in this valley. She's rooted in all the people in the history here. And like, I felt that familiarity, which was such a magical experience for me reading this book. I'm so happy right now. I'm turning red.
I'm so, honestly, like, when I read this book and I finished this book, I was so certain that you were going to like it. Like, I was 1,000% sure you were going to like it. Not because, but the one reason I thought that you were going to like it was the magic system. And that's like, that's what stood out to me. And I liked it for completely separate reasons, but the magic system is very special. And I'd never seen something like that.
It's not even that the system itself was amazing, because there are other magic systems that I enjoy more, like, formulaically. But this felt like it was my magic system. It's not often that I see Polish culture in media or in something that I'm consuming. And I saw it here, and I also saw things that I recognized myself. Like, again, that song. Agnieszka sings a song to go along with the spell, and that she transforms the type of magic that Sarkin is using. I was reading this thing, and then she says, I'm singing it with the tune of Many Years in mind, the happy birthday song. And I was like, wait. I know that song. Like, I can sing that song in Polish. I know the words to that song. I know the tune of that song. So I picked up the book and I started reading the spell to the tune of Stolat. That. And like, that was such a magical experience to me. It was so wonderful.
So that's the thing that stood out to me was the singing, the songs.
Yeah.
That was the thing that, like, okay, you can have any regular fucking spell and have it a certain way and whatever. But the fact that it's being placed together with music or just, like, familiar sounds, I just found that really, really, really beautiful. Like, it's just...
Yeah, because not really a spoiler, but, like, magic has a word that you can associate it with it. So if you want to do something, you can say a word. But you can also personalize that word. And therefore change the type of spell that you do.
Yeah.
So like you can shorten a word or lengthen a word or a single word and it personalizes that to you. You can familiarize the magic to you.
And that's why
this felt so powerful to me. Like I was familiarizing the magic in this book to me.
And I think that's why Agnieszka's like ability with magic is so different and so, not so different, but like it's just new. You know, is she, but she personalizes it to her, her, who she is and where she's from. And that's what makes it really, really special. Because
if you're reading it, you personalize that magic the way you pronounce that
word.
I'm reading it, I add a song that's familiar to me, that's familiar to Agnieszka. And then I make that my magic. Like, to me, that was such an exhilarating feeling.
Yeah.
And again, like, I know other people have experienced that as well. Like, this is well-constructed magic in the way that the reader actually engages with it. And also, it fixes one of my pet peeves, which is, like, magic is this specific word that is pronounced this specific way, because, like...
Wingardium Leviosa!
It's Wingardium Leviosa!
It's not Leviosa, it's Leviosa!
Which is bullshit, because, you know what? Not everyone can speak with a voice, like, with a physical voice, with vocal cords. And also... language is magical, but that's kind of that's boring.
Like, yeah, it is boring.
Magic is not just a phrase that you say that is fixed in time and like you can never develop it. Because then in my mind, that means that there is a finite amount of magic and it has already been established.
Mm. Magic is fluid in this.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, ooh, it's so good.
It is good.
One big criticism, though.
Yes. Other than the beginning.
Sarkin is an absolute jerk.
Oh, yeah. But that's how, but that's all her male characters in the book. Like this.
Yeah, but I don't agree with that. Like at the beginning.
Yeah, I agree. Sarkin, I agree with you too.
By taking these girls, he emotionally abuses them and he abducts them. Like he abducts them into his tower without even telling them why, without telling their families why. And then everyone in the valley winds up thinking that he's a monster who ruins girls, their words. And then Sarkin spends like the first quarter of the book insulting Agnieszka, calling her ugly, incompetent, useless. And in a very serious way, he has abusive tendencies and problems with both control and anger. And he, what is the word? He lashes out on Agnieszka a lot because of those problems.
Yeah.
And somehow there's a romantic relationship between them. And I don't understand it. Like, it should not be there. I don't know why Agnieszka develops any kind of romantic feeling for him. But it's also, like, this is not a spoiler. She mentions within the first 10 pages that Sarkin is beautiful and that she would maybe go after him if he was a boy at a fair. So, like, well, it's not that hard to think that this is the romantic interest of the novel.
I don't know, because that bothered me, too, when I was reading the book. And it also bothered me when I was reading Spinning Silver, because, like, the Stark Lord is very mean to Miriam. Like, very mean to her.
Really?
Mean in the sense, like, you are a mortal girl and I am, you know, whatever.
Well, he's differentiating the two of them.
He is different.
Yeah.
And once he realizes that she has these, like, abilities, he starts to fall in love with her. But, like,
oh. Yeah, okay, because she's special?
Yeah, it's a bit weird, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, I don't know, I found it bizarre. Like, I wish he was somewhat kinder. I mean, the way this book was written was just, the language was bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, because you're shifting perspectives, the language changes as the perspective changes, right? So at one point when you're never in the Stark's perspective, but when Miriam is retelling or you're in her, like, perspective, you see the way that he speaks and it's just, like, very, like, I want to say lyrical, but not. It's just, like, he talks in, like, this weird way that no one talks. Yeah. But it's just not nice because she is inferior. She is mortal.
Yeah, that's exactly how Sarkin talks to Agnieszka. And then all of a sudden, they're interested in each other.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how that develops. And I don't want it to develop.
I didn't find it organic.
Yeah, I found it surprising. Not in the way that, like, oh, this relationship was unexpected. But just surprising in the way that I can't believe that Agnieszka, this hard-headed, go-getter type of girl, would be attracted to this person who is unlike her, who is mean to her and is constantly insulting her and honestly has, like, a lot of control and anger that he lashes out
with
at you.
I'm thinking back on Spinning Silver. It changes with the Stark Lord. Like, he's not on she's not on his level, but then she, like, proves that she is, and then he kind of, like, starts,
which is problematic in itself.
He, like, falls in love with her, but she's like, nah, stay away from me, whatever. Like,
yeah.
And she pities him and she's like, no, I have to, like, you know, like, help him in this situation. I don't want to give
you
too
know
much
what
away.
I felt that way a lot about Sarkin and Agnieszka, because Agnieszka kind of, she gives, again, this goes back to her, like, having insight about characters that maybe she wouldn't be capable of having if she was a normal human being, and not just a character in a story. She finds reasons for why Sarkin is who he is, and you find out a little bit of his own backstory and why he's like this, why he builds walls and why he shut off and why he's so defensive around people. But then it feels like she kind of doesn't care about that, doesn't care that they're just not a good match at all, and is like, you know what, I'm going to help him. And that is a really problematic trope in all of literature and all of media, where it's the woman's responsibility or someone's responsibility in a relationship to help the other person, and, like, all of that responsibility falls on her shoulders. And it's not now that both of these novels are kind of paired up like this, It's weird. I don't like it.
It is weird.
And honestly, it's not that it ruined it. It's not that this ruined Uprooted for me, but it,
yeah, it didn't ruin definitely the book set for it me. Back a notch. I don't know when I feel like I'm conditioned to like that type of stuff.
I think so. Which is also funny yeah. because, again, the abduction narrative is kind of the thing that you read in A Court of Mist and Fury yeah. and A Court of Thorns and Roses. But specifically, because that was on my mind the last time.
Yeah.
Right before I read Uprooted, I kept on thinking about consent while reading Uprooted. Mm. And there's not any consent happening at the beginning.
Oh, there's no consent in this. I mean, consent. No. Actually, no, there is, actually. There is.
I do have to say, though, at the very end of Uprooted, I was fully okay. This is a full-out spoiler yeah. alert now.
That was
I was
my
fully okay
part.
With Starkin and Agnieszka not being a thing, and yeah. I was convinced that it had just been, like, a fling that yeah. they had, and I was okay with that. And then the last sentence completely turned that around for me.
Oh, really?
And made it okay.
Right?
Yeah. That honestly completely turned around my perspective, and I was suddenly okay with the romance. I still don't think the beginning was good. I still don't think that this Beauty and the Beast narrative needs to be perpetuated in yeah, our culture today. And Sarkin is still an absolute jerk, but I was
and
okay
made
with
it okay.
Yeah, that last little line. I don't know what it is. Changed the novel for me.
Same with that last line, and I pre-read the last line, which motivated me to read through the rest of the book, and I was like, what the fuck, she does it again, man, those yeah. last lines.
She's like, really good at endings.
Open endings.
Really bad at beginnings.
Open endings, like, you can take from yeah. that ending what yeah. you will, even with
yeah.
Uprooted, exactly. you can take from that ending what you will, like, you don't know what happens to Sarkin and Agnieszka. That's what cemented that book for me, like, as a favorite.
Yeah.
That was yeah. one of the best endings I've ever read in a book.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just, like, wow. And I read a lot of YA, so the endings are cheap.
Yeah.
Cheap
yeah.
in the sense of, like, they're multi-book series and they end on, like,
yeah.
cliffhangers, or, like, the endings are done too quickly and they're nothing's resolved, or I'm yeah. not, that's not to say that YA authors aren't good writers. It just feels yeah. like they're trying to appease a large mass and yeah. it's not really done thoughtfully.
Yeah, I think definitely a good ending based on what I've seen from Uprooted, or in being inspired by Uprooted, it wraps everything up
mm-hmm.
completely. It gives you a sense of completion
mm-hmm.
and happiness,
mm-hmm.
but it leaves so much potential.
And wants you, like, it leaves you wanting more.
I didn't feel like I wanted more.
At the beginning I did, but then I was very okay with not getting what really? I wanted. Yeah, because I was like, no.
You want more of what was...
What could be.
What was planted in your mind.
Yes.
Yeah. It was honestly a very good book. I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah. So what are you planning on reading for next time?
I don't know.
Okay.
But if I receive the Witcher books that I've ordered,
mm-hmm.
I would like to read Blood of Elves
yes.
by Andrzej Sapkowski. But I don't know if I'm going to get them in time because there is a back order
oh, nice.
On the Witcher books because everybody's reading them and buying them right now.
That's why you should get an e-reader.
I know. I was seriously considering it.
You should
and
get
I
one.
Went on Twitter... on the Book Rant Podcast Twitter, and I was asking people if it was a good idea, and I was so convinced, but also I don't really want to spend $150 right now on an e-reader.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What might you read?
Well, I have two books in mind.
Mm-hmm.
The first one being The Female of the Species by Mindy McGinnis, and The Nowhere okay. Girls by Amy Reid. They're both, I think they both deal with very serious things, and they're not like your typical okay. contemporary YA, so that's why I'm drawn to them. But yeah, I'm like, I might read The Female of the Species because I'm in that murder feel.
I mean, true crime. True crime.
True crime.
Oh no.
True crime.
Listen.
Look.
If you have any recommendations for us... If you know what we should read for next episode and mm-hmm. help with our indecision,
mm-hmm.
send us recommendations or just talk to us at bookrantpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can also reach us on our socials, on Twitter, which is at BookRentPodcast, and our Instagram is the same thing. And yeah, mm-hmm. We're pretty active. That's all.
Okay. thanks for listening, everyone. And, you know, as a last note, I'm hearing from a lot of people, not even hearing, but I'm witnessing a lot of people reading and telling me about those books because they've been listening to the podcast. And that makes me so happy. So just go forth and read, people.
Yes.
Have fun with a book.
Have fun with a book. Anyway.
Anyways, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. So.
Yes.
I read.
Did you put your timer on?
Did you put your name in a goblet of fire?
That will forever be my favorite. In the book, it'll be like, Harry, was it you that put your name in the goblet of fire? And then in the movie, Harry, did you put your name in the goblet of fire?